All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to another meeting of our Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force. This is Lauren Ritchie with ONC. Quick roll call of the task force members that I see on the phone and in Adobe. We have Alex Goss, Alexis Snyder, Anil Jain, Deb Strickland, Denise Webb, Gus Gerarcy, Jim Jurgis, Ram Sriram, Rich Landon, Sasha Termott. Are there any others that have not, that I did not announce that are on the phone? Okay. Just a quick audio check. Do we have Cheryl Turney on the line yet? Okay. Alex, in the meantime, I will hand it over to you to get us started, and we'll circle back to confirm when we have Cheryl on the line.
Yeah, thank you for – oh, awesome. Good to have you. We were – I know I had some a little bit of challenges getting in as well today. So we've completed roll call. So let's go ahead and advance to the next slide. Oh, I'm sorry. You can stay here. Actually, I apologize. Go back one slide. So today's agenda, we're going to provide a brief recap from our last meeting, talk about the progress that has been occurring in the last week since we last met, and then we're going to pivot over to have two set of demonstrations today from SureScripts and CoverMyMeds. This is our pharmacy part of our demonstration opportunity. We'll have those demonstrations before we go to public comment and then wrap up. Next slide, please. So let's go to the next slide and give a little bit of perspective about the last meeting and what we accomplished in that very productive dialogue. We took two paths. The first path was to describe the work of the Ideal State and Guiding Principles Small Subgroup, also known as the Happy Path Group. We have had a good discussion last week that helped give us some perspectives related to the preliminary set of principles and ideal state requirements that we had identified, really provided us with an opportunity to consolidate some of our thinking around ceilings and floor sort of facets, as well as transparency aspects related to the information that would need to be exchanged in prior authorization. We also took a deep dive into some of the minimum necessary considerations and how we might want to frame those up. Josh and team walked us through the data categories table. They really advanced the framework of the data classes consideration and really synced up the work with the ISA, the ONC's Interoperability Advisory, to sync categorizations, data classes, and maturity of the standards, coming up with a nice visual way to sort of categorize the classes and the standards that are in the marketplace today on a low, medium, high sort of framing. We also took some time to consider the need of extracting our work from a prior authorization level up to a higher level of intersection of clinical and administrative concepts. We're going to need to get back to that level of discussion, but thought that we really wanted to take a deeper dive into some demonstrations, first with pharmacy and then with medical prior authorization, and that will be a main focus of our conversation this week and next. Can we go to the next slide, please? So today, Cheryl and I thought we'd give you a brief update on the workbook progress that's been made between meetings before turning it over for our demonstrations. So I'll cover a bit on the on the Happy Path group to talk about that we've met, end of last week. The team got together and walked through the feedback from the last call. We did do some consolidation, as anyone who's been out there looking at the workbook might see. We incorporated the discussion points from the last call. We enhanced, added a new guiding principle, and also then started to deduplicate and consolidate and reframe as appropriate to the higher level context that we're trying to take with the ideal state. And so we've provided detailed notes in the workbook on the changes that we've made. We're going to continue to evolve that work this week, and then also take start to look at the recommendations tab that Cheryl discussed last week, and that she was going, she had gone back through HITACH recommendations. The full HITACH body had had some discussions and recommendations over this past year. So she captured those recommendations as a starting point for us. And so the once the guiding principles and ideal state happy path team finishes up our initial work on our tab, we will take a review of those recommendations before we then reframe and sort of try to put into a much cleaner format our guiding principles and ideal state work. And that'll give us the focus for the next couple calls that we'll have. At least that's our current game plan for the Happy Path team. That consists of Anil and Arian and Alexis, Tom Mason, and myself. So that gives my update on that workbook effort this week. Cheryl, would you like, would you or Josh like to talk about the data classes effort?
I'm going to have to let Josh talk about it because I wasn't able to meet with the team this week. I do think they met at least one time. Josh, are you on the call?
Hey, Cheryl. Yeah, I'm on. So I think in the email that went out last week, there was requested any kind of additions or augmentation to what we had discussed last week by the end of the, by Friday of last week. So I'm not aware of any feedback we got on any potential changes to what we discussed last week. So we did a little bit of cleanup just to the table to make it a little more presentable, but outside of that, it seemed like the feedback from the group was supportive overall, and there weren't any significant changes necessary. So if there's anything we've missed, please feel free to reach out to us, and we'd be happy to incorporate those changes, but no significant updates over the past week.
Okay, great. I have looked at the data classes. They look really great right now in terms of, you know, that you guys have filled out most of the information. And regarding the work that I did complete, Alex covered most of that. I did also add considerations under other considerations that came from any of the presentations where groups came to HITACH as well, and they didn't really fit as recommendations, but there were things that groups had asked us to consider when we were doing this work. So one of the future activities we need to all be going through is to review all of the things that we've pulled out of other documents and added to the other considerations tab. So, you know, part of the homework we're going to ask you guys to do over the next week is to take a look at that other considerations tab and the recommendations. The recommendations are not meant to be, they're meant to seed for us to review so we can say, does this recommendation make sense? I did include in the recommendations so that you know, or the other considerations, what the source document was that these came from and when it was shared with HITACH. And all of those documents are available to everyone in this group out on the website. So you simply look at the HITACH calendar and you can find that date, and then you can find the presentation with the individual's name and the group that they represented. I included there. So just please, you know, take the time to go out and review these and ask questions, make comments, so that when we do review them, we'll have good, meaningful conversations about these topics. Back to you, Alex.
Thank you, Cheryl. So at this point, I think the key message is that we're looking for all task force members to take a look at the workbook. You can focus on any of the tabs, all of the tabs. What we really are looking for is broader input or at least familiarity with the content to aid our discussions. We will be resuming some of our detailed discussion next in about 2 weeks. And we're going to focus this week and next on some demonstrations. So I think at this point, Cheryl, I think we're about ready to pivot to that point. Would you agree?
I agree. Thank you, Alex.
Okay, great. Just want to make sure, is everyone seeing the slides?
Yes.
Okay. From Luke?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are.
Great. Okay, at this time, I'd like to introduce and welcome Luke Forrester-Broughton to our task force call. Luke, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. This is Luke Forrester-Broughton. I'm a director on the product innovation team at SureScripts, and I've been working on electronic prior authorization for the last 8 years and working closely with NCPDP when they initially developed the standard way back in 2012 and 2013. So I'm excited to talk about all the progress that we've made in the meantime. If we go to the next slide, just to set up the challenge a little bit, as I'm sure you're all well aware, prior authorization is a huge challenge for physicians, both from an administrative standpoint, but also from a burnout standpoint. So we've done a few studies on physician burnout, and it's really family practice doctors that are being hit the hardest in terms of burnout. And if you think about all of the other things that they have to do in their roles, the last thing they want to do is spend a lot of time on what they consider unnecessary administrative red tape. And prior authorization is certainly one of the things that they spend the most time on when we're thinking about how often they're interacting with a patient's health plan. The largest chunk of their interactions with that plan revolves around prior authorization. And from a pharmacy's perspective too, once the prescription actually makes it to the pharmacy, pharmacists are reaching out a lot to get in touch with the health plans and figure out if that's even the best medication for the patient to be on, or if there is a medication that could be dispensed that wouldn't require prior authorization. So it's a problem not only for physicians and patients, but also for pharmacies and the plans too. Plans spend an awful lot of time on the phone with prescribers trying to walk them through the process and figure out how to get the patient on the medication that's needed. So if we go to the next slide, or two slides actually, it's certainly an evolving process. So this slide outlines what the traditional prior authorization workflow looks like from a prescriber perspective. And up until the advent of electronic prior authorization through the NCPDP standard, the prior authorization process was very manual and phone and fax-based. And so you can see, if we think about this in terms of the e-prescribing experience, the member would arrive at the clinic, the physician would use her EHR to try and identify the best medication for the patient. And a lot of times she would be looking at not patient-specific data, she would be looking at traditional formulary data that's at a group or a plan level. And that is directionally accurate and directionally helpful, but it's not really helpful in assisting the provider in making the most efficacious choice when it comes to what medication to prescribe for the patient. So there are no opportunities to look at costs across different channels. It's difficult to compare therapeutic alternatives when you're looking at group and plan level data. And so a lot of times the physician is practicing and prescribing in the dark without knowing if prior authorization is going to be required for the patient. And so the end result is that the prescription leaves the EMR system, arrives at the pharmacy, and then when the pharmacy adjudicates the claim, it gets rejected because prior authorization is needed, and then the pharmacist is reaching out using phone or fax or some other method back to the physician office to try to get that prescription authorized or find the alternative. And what we see is not only is that it frustrating for the physician and the pharmacy, but from a patient standpoint, there was a study several years ago that showed that 40% of the time when a patient arrived at a pharmacy and was turned away because prior authorization is needed, the patient never actually went on any medication at all. So it's not just that they arrive at the pharmacy and then can't get on the medication that their doctor prescribed them. It's that they're not getting on medication, period. So this has negative health impacts for the patient, and this causes a lot of unnecessary delay and frustration across the spectrum of care that we wanted to try and tackle in a better way. So if we go to the next slide, what we try to do as an organization is to, rather than have the prior authorization be only identified once the prescription has already arrived at the pharmacy, we wanted to make the identification of the need for prior authorization part of the e-prescribing process and make sure that all of the different tools and standards that our EMR partners are using are working in conjunction with each other to provide that actionable data at the point of care so the physician can make the best possible choice for the patient. And so it's the electronic prior authorization process is really an additional layer onto the traditional e-prescribing process and isn't something that happens after the fact or outside of that physician workflow. So in an ideal scenario, the member is arriving at the clinic, the EMR system is using the X12 eligibility standard to determine where that patient has pharmacy benefit coverage, and then they're cross-referencing that with the NCPDP formulary data that the EMR is downloading on a weekly basis. And so that's really the fundamental basis on which prior authorization has been based until we started getting into the technology that allowed a real-time prescription benefit, which is now the best way to identify for a patient-specific prescribing event what the best medication would be for that patient. So using that data, the physician is able to see not only alternatives that are patient-specific for the medication that they've tried to prescribe, but they can also see cost at those different channels, whether it's 30-day at retail, 90-day at retail, or mail order, and are able to see at a patient-specific level if prior authorization is required. And so then at that point, if the physician wants to switch to a medication that doesn't require prior authorization, she can do that. Or if she wants to pursue the original medication that she wanted to prescribe, she can kick off that electronic prior authorization process prospectively so they can get that prior authorization out of the way before the physician even gets to the pharmacy, before the patient even gets to the pharmacy. And then I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but we're also, as an organization, focusing on trying to help with that specialty patient enrollment form. So if there is a specialty medication that's been prescribed, that form can be filled out electronically as part of that prescriber's workflow and then make its way to the specialty hub or the specialty pharmacy that's dispensing the medication. So they have the medication and the enrollment form there electronically when they can start their process. So the end goal with all of this is to have prior authorization be done electronically when truly necessary, but to avoid PA if possible through the use of real-time prescription benefit transactions. And if it is one of the specialty medications, to try to get that work done as far upfront in the workflow as possible, so everything can be done to get the patient on the medication quickly. If we go to the next slide, so really an overview of what that prospective EPA provides is it allows that proactive notification of PA requirements for physicians within their workflow. Because we're pinging the pharmacy benefit manager in real time for all of our EPA transactions, it's no longer a matter of wondering as a physician or as a nurse if you're actually even filling out the right prior authorization form, because we're getting that criteria back in real time from the payer directly. And so all of the information that a physician or an end user is filling out to do the prior authorization is always the most up-to-date criteria that the payer needs to know in order to quickly adjudicate that prior authorization. And because the messages are coming straight from the EHR, a lot of that prior authorization information is already pre-populated, so you don't have to spend time filling out the patient name and the prescriber information, the medication information. All of that's getting pulled automatically, so the only answers that a physician or an end user has to complete are related to the clinical data around that prior authorization. And what we've seen is that really cuts down on the amount of time that prescribers and their staff are spending on PAs, and it essentially cuts that time in half, and we'll show that in a couple slides. So if we go to the next slide, this is just a mock-up of an EHR and what the physician would see within her workflow. So you can see that for the patient that she was trying to prescribe Prometrium for, using that real-time benefit data on the bottom of the screen, you can see what that medication would cost at a range of pharmacy channels, 90-day retail, mail order, and 30-day retail. And so that allows the physician to make an informed choice and have that conversation with the patient on if the cost is manageable or if she should pursue a different alternative. And it also gives her that patient-specific prior authorization information so she can choose to switch to a different medication that doesn't require prior authorization if that's available. And so it's just outline the type of information that is now available at the point of care, and the EMR partners all across the country are working hard to make sure that they're presenting the right level of detail where they can have the physician be engaged with that display and be ready to have that conversation with the patient in a way that just hasn't been possible before. And that's really important because when you talk to physicians and look at different studies, a cost as little as $10 can be the difference of whether or not the physician or the patient will actually pick up that medication or not. So it is really important to have that conversation, and we're finally able to provide the physician with that level of detail where she can have that cost discussion and make sure that the patient knows exactly what he or she will have to pay when they arrive at the pharmacy. If we go to the next slide.
Hey, Luke.
Yes.
Luke, this is Alex, and I just wanted to ask you if you wanted to take questions at the end or as you go.
I'll just get through these and then I can take any at the end if that works.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. So the next slide just outlines the growth of electronic prior authorization, some of the keys that we focus with our partners on as they're transitioning from a manual prior authorization to an electronic one. And that really is to focus on the holistic process. So not just reimagining how you ask questions now that you can ask them electronically and have complicated logic built in to make sure that the physician is only answering the minimal amount of questions necessary. But it also involves things like making sure that your eligibility and formulary data is up to date and is accurately reflecting all of the medications that actually require prior authorization, and then making sure that the real-time prescription benefit solution from a payer perspective is accurately reflecting what medications require PA and what the cost is. It's also important to make sure that you're enabling that across all patient groups. So there's a regulation in flight to require it for Medicare Part D plans, but it really is important in order to encourage as wide adoption on the physician side as possible. You want to make sure that payers are making electronic prior authorization and real-time prescription benefit information across their entire book of business, because that will help the uptick and the adoption outside of just focusing on it for Part D. And then the other important thing is just making sure that on the EMR side, if they're implementing these standards, that they can really be thinking about how to improve the physician's workflow overall by not making things so obtrusive that the physician gets overwhelmed with information, but to try to do as many things automatically as possible. And we really focus with them on getting the workflow right to drive additional adoption utilization as well. And if we go to the next slide, you can see that across the country, 94% of prescribers are represented by an EHR that's contracted for prior authorization. And CoverMyMeds will have, I'm sure, some great stats on this in their presentation too, but we really have seen a wide uptick in adoption across the physician space and across our payer space. 97% of patients are represented by a PBM that has electronic prior authorization available. So it has been outstanding growth. Not all of the health plans underneath each of those PBMs are enabled. That's something that are working with our PBM partners on to make sure that they have as many health plans as possible participating in electronic prior authorization. And it'll take some time before we get full saturation there, but it really has been encouraging to see the amount of adoption and utilization across the country, even in the, with the lack of a federal regulation forcing them to move. And if we go to the next slide, I'll just wrap up by, why don't we go to the next slide, just to make sure I have time for questions. The one thing I wanted to highlight is we did our partner, Aurora Advocate Aurora Healthcare, did a study to look at what their prior authorization process looked like before and after electronic prior authorization. And they went from only 30% of prior authorizations being started a day after the prescription was written to 75% of their PAs being completed the day after the prescription was written. And they decreased the time almost in half of the amount of active minutes that their users were spending filling out prior authorization questions. And what they also saw is that by having this be a prospective part of the e-prescribing process rather than a retrospective process that only happened once the prescription got to the pharmacy, they saw a 6% increase in the first 6 months that they were live with EPA, a 6% increase in the first fill adherence for all medications. So just making sure that all the things they were doing to improve the prior authorization process for their users impacted not only medications that required PA, but medications that didn't require PA. So it's just an important part of increasing member satisfaction and making sure that patients are getting the medications that they need. And it decreased the wait time that patients had in waiting for their medications by over 2 days. So I just wanted to highlight that as a case study just brings to life some of the workflow improvements that I was speaking to earlier in the slides. So I will pause here and answer any questions anybody has.
Well, thank you, Luke. Looks like we have two already in the queue, Alexis and then Gus.
Hi, Alexis Snyder. I had a question in reference to those with dual insurance and more than one payer and the automated process that is able to show costs. Whether or not a PA is required, and then the automated process for the questions to be able to submit that PA and get it done in such a timely fashion, which is terrific. However, a lot of the adherence and the non-picking up of medications and the problems patients are having when they're complex or sometimes complex, particularly complex, but have secondary insurance, is that it's all good and well to see the first payer up front, but without being able to see what the second payer is going to do. Sometimes there's not even a PA required for the first insurance, but there is for the second insurance, and that sometimes falls through. As far as expense, knowing what the second one is going to pay up or not pick up or not pick up, et cetera. And so I'm wondering if SureScripts has contemplated on that, and if there's any way you're going to be able to create into your electronic process to account for secondary payer?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is a really good question. So one thing I'll say is that part of the challenge that we have today with a traditional eligibility process is that a lot of times using the 270-271 eligibility X12 standard, it does have the ability for payers to indicate in the eligibility response if they are the primary or secondary payer, but a lot of times the payers don't do that and they leave that blank. So as a prescriber, if I run an eligibility for a patient that has dual coverage, it will come back and say it's Express Scripts and Caremark. It will, both of those coverages will come back and I'll be able to alternate between the two. But since the payer is not identifying if they're primary or secondary, and sometimes they just don't know, that remains a challenge. So it would fall to the physician to check with the patient and see if what coverage they want to use essentially, and hope that they're doing it in the right order. But that's definitely a pain point that we're trying to figure out. How can we, as a network, work with our payer partners to help get a better understanding of the of dual coverage and benefits coordination at the point of care, so we can present that in a meaningful way? Because right now it's definitely a challenge where even though the standard allows it, our partners oftentimes do not populate that. And so it does leave it to the physician and patient to try to figure that out on their own, which is not ideal.
Right. I think you mentioned the second piece I was thinking as you were talking about coordination of benefit is really being the piece. Because even if both are there and both are entered by the physician and the patient, the coordination isn't there. So the first payer is sometimes allowing payment and the second payer does not. The second payer will cover a different medication that the first payer doesn't. And so I think it's that coordination piece that also makes it really difficult for the patient.
Agreed. And I think, and one of the things that's important too is that in the eligibility response, you also have the ability to indicate what type of coverage it is, which would allow EHRs or us as a network or anybody else to help with that benefit coordination a little more, where even if you had two coverages come back in the eligibility response and the PBMs didn't know if they were primary or secondary, if you could see that one was commercial and one was Medicare, you could do some of that benefits coordination on your own, or we could indicate that when we sent that to the physician system, so they would be able to display those in the proper way. So I think there are some workarounds that we're trying to work with our payers on to see if they can populate as much information as they know about what type of coverage it is. So even if they can't say if they're primary or secondary, we might be able to determine that on their behalf when we send that to the physician system.
Certainly been an interesting consideration related to coordination of benefits and dual eligibles. It really really reveals an increased complexity related to transparency for patients and their caregivers as well as the providers. So I think, Alexis, are you good? Do you have a follow-up question? Or?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay. You're welcome. Gus?
Thanks, Alex, and thank you for that presentation. I, of course, having worked with lots of providers, the question and prescribers, the question comes to me that in your trial run with Aurora or other experiences, how much pushback did you get from providers and prescribers, and how is the workflow worked out? So, in other words, in the middle of a busy day, you're seeing patients. You write a script for somebody, and then it's saying you need additional clinical information for prior auth. I can just see a prescriber, throwing the monitor through the wall. How did that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, Gus. I think we see different physician system vendors handle it differently, and some health systems handle it differently. The way that we recommend that a health system implement EPA is to use a centralized process. And that is what Aurora did, where they say they go to their organization and say, rather than have every physician's nurse or a set of nurses handle prior authorizations individually, why don't we create a centralized team of people that know PA really well and can handle PAs on behalf of the entire organization. So that's what Aurora did. And from a physician standpoint, that's really great because then they can focus on prescribing. And if they see that a medication requires PA, they know that when they submit that prescription, that they've got a team that in the background is going to get routed that prior authorization task so they can take care of it and the physician doesn't have to. So the physician can still make a decision on whether or not to pursue a medication that requires PA, or she can switch to one that doesn't.
Right.
But a lot of times there's a team behind her where she knows that if it requires PA, that team's going to handle it, and they'll do the coordination of making sure that patient gets to the pharmacy and gets dispensed the medication. I think even in cases where we don't see a centralized workflow, the physician still, it's better for her to have the information up front and then switch to a medic that doesn't require PA, then at least the staff is set up and can start that prior authorization process immediately, rather than send the patient to the pharmacy and then the patient gets there and gets turned away and then they're frustrated with the physician because they're wondering, well, why didn't my doctor know that this required PA? Like, they prescribed me this and now I can't get the medication. I don't know why that is. But you're right, Gus. It's hardly ever the physician herself that's filling out the criteria. Oftentimes she's writing the prescription, but then the EHR system is routing the actual prior authorization task to the nurse or the medical secretary or whoever in that organization is doing the prior authorization on the physician's behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there is a way to kind of move on to the next patient without necessarily having to dot every I and cross every T and defer the I dotting and T crossing to someone else on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the nicest parts about the electronic workflow is that because everything is happening within the physician's EHR, you can designate certain responsible individuals. So the physician hits submit on the prescription, we're sending that request to the pharmacy benefit manager, but then when they return the question set for the PA, they're not returning it to the physician's queue. They're returning it to either a queue that all the nurses review or a specific user's queue that's responsible for PA, so the physician doesn't have to worry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So this is Alex, and I just raised my hand. I'm going to jump in the queue here, building on what Gus had just talked about, because it seems to me that one of the things we've been looking at is this transparency aspect, not just about the caregivers and the patient throughout the entire process, but ideally there might be some opportunity for some price knowledge. And Luke, I remember you noting that there was this opportunity for, or you said that the $10, it could even be a difference in price could really influence a patient's choice on whether or not to pick up a prescription or not. And so if I'm hearing the dialogue between you and Gus correctly, the doctor at that point of care with the patient says, okay, CZQ, I'm going to recommend this prescription. That gets put into the system. The request goes out to the PBM, then comes back into the queue of the applicable person on the team for that provider. And so at that point, CZQ has left the front-facing experience with the doctor or the prescriber and then has left that room. The PBM would reply, and the patient may or may not still be in the building, so to speak. Am I following correctly?
That's a really good question. So I should have been clear. The PA information is often not handled by the prescriber. The cost piece and the real-time prescription benefit, the EHR can design it. If they have somebody that's designated to talk about cost with a patient, which they sometimes do, they could route that information to that person. But oftentimes what we see is that the cost information, it because it comes back so quickly, it's coming back in under a second with all of the alternatives. It's coming back to the prescriber. So she can see as she's typing in, okay, I want to prescribe Prometrium here's the price, here are some alternatives. She can actually make the decision there if she wants to, or she could have that made somewhere else, but it comes back quickly enough for her to make that, for her to make the decision and have a conversation with the patient if she wants to while she's sitting there with the patient still.
All right, so thank you, Luke, for clarifying that, because it is on the fly, really interactive information that enables that doctor slash prescriber to still have the patient there with them, even if then there are some other additional activities that would be handled by someone else on the care team for the prior authorization follow-up requirements.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you. And we have another question for you. This one is from Rich Landon.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for a really good presentation, interesting stuff, and looks like it took a lot of time and effort to put it together, so we appreciate that. You made several references in your presentation about EHRs and health plans building toward this. Can you give us some sort of sense of how much of this is really deployed and operational, and how much is kind of looking forward to some sort of implementation in the future? Thanks.
Yeah, great question, Rich. I would say from a PBM side, it's a little different on the payer side, because a lot of times, depending on the PBM's relationship with their member health plans, sometimes they have to sell through to individual health plans before they would turn them on for prior authorization electronically. Some of them just have it part of their main service, and so they automatically turn on all of their health plans. So I don't, it underneath the contracted number, I would say the majority of health plans in the country are enabled for EPA, but it's because there are so many health plans, it's hard to get a totally accurate sense of what that is. And also a lot of health plans don't designate prior authorization to their PBM. They do it on their own. So I'd say in general, a lot of state Medicaid plans are having challenges getting up and running with electronic prior authorization, just because they don't have the infrastructure set up, and they don't have the bandwidth at the moment to be able to implement an electronic process. So we do see a lag on the Medicaid side of things. But for Part D patients, I would say that the vast majority of Part D patients will either have or will have access to electronic prior authorization for their patients by the first of the year if they don't have it already. On the physician side, we do see a pretty rapid uptick. Some of the EHR partners have enabled all of their users, and now we're working with them to make sure that their users are using it. So the software might be available to an end user, but the physician might not actually be engaging with it a lot. So that is something that we've got a dedicated team that works with all of our EHR partners to go on site, sit with users, do education, train the EMR trainers so they can activate all of their users that want to do electronic prior authorization. So it is, I'd say, on the EHR side, because of all of their priorities, they're not quite as far along as I'd like in terms of use of electronic prior authorization, because there hasn't been that regulatory mandate, but hopefully the one that is, we'll have a final rule on any day now, will help spur them along and make sure that all of their users have access to EPA and are actively using it for Part D patients.
Thanks.
And Luke, thank you for this. This is Alex. And I think I just want to clarify, when you were talking about Part B, you were assuming Part D for the Medicare prescription drug program,
yes,
insurance program, correct? Okay.
Correct.
Awesome.
Yep.
So, thank you so very much for your presentation and answering our questions. I believe we're now going to pivot to cover my meds, and Cheryl will be facilitating this portion of our call today.
Thank you so much, Alex. And let's transition to the Cover My Med speaker. I think first it's going to be Kim Deal Boyd.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Kim. Yes.
Thank you, Cheryl. And thank you for the opportunity to present to the task force today. We really appreciate it. As you referenced, my name is Kim Boyd. I am the VP of Industry Relations and Government Affairs at Cover My Meds. I've worked in the healthcare technology space for over 17 years, operationalizing claims and prior authorization transactions and more. I am also the task group lead for the NCPDP Prior Authorization Workflow Task Group. Just by way of background, really quickly, wanted to give you some information about Cover My Meds. We are one of the fastest growing healthcare technology companies in the U.S. We have technological solutions that help patients get the medications they need to live healthy lives by seamlessly connecting the healthcare network to improve medication access and thereby increasing speed to therapy and reducing prescription abandonment. But we also do this by facilitating appropriate access to medications through those solutions that help our customers avoid billions of dollars a year in administrative waste and avoidable medical spend caused by that prescription abandonment, and also help to reduce the administrative burden for providers and their clinical and support staff. Next, please. Since our inception in 2008, we have helped patients access their needed medications more than 160 million times. Actually, 180, I need to update my docking points, my apologies. We've actually done that 180 million times, and we've done this by leveraging that healthcare technology platform and using functionality such as electronic prior authorization and real-time benefit tools. Next, please. Joining me today are Miranda Gill, who is an advanced practice nurse and also our senior director on our provider team, as well as Anna Klatt, who is a senior manager on our product team, reporting to and supporting our provider team. And then Liz Otley, our senior manager of product on the payer PBM team. Next, please. During our time together, we would like to detail for you what the current electronic prior authorization process looks like today. And given our years of experience, what the ideal electronic PA process and workflow should look like. And last but not least, our recommendations for the task force consideration as you prepare your recommendations for the HITECH committee. I'm going to now turn this over to Liz Otley, our Senior Product Manager.
Thanks, Kim. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Just wanted to confirm before I started talking. So to kind of kick things off here, we just wanted to provide as high level of an overview, and this is kind of a little bit in the weeds, but a high level overview of the end-to-end PA EPA transaction. So there are really four ways to submit a prior authorization via Cover My Meds. And all of these are facilitated via either our portal or our pharmacy and EHR integrations, and then submitted to the plan or the PBM via the NCPDP script standard. So that can be done retrospectively, which is started by a pharmacy, and prospectively, which is started by a provider. So at the top on the left, you can see there are two initiation points for an EPA. Retrospectively, when the patient goes to pick up a medication and the claim is rejected, the pharmacy system will automatically initiate a prior authorization request. Or prospectively, the provider's office, and that's usually a medical assistant or other PA specialist, can also initiate a prior authorization. And so kind of under that subdomain of prospective, there are two ways that provider can initiate a request. Number one, if the pharmacy notifies the provider that a PA is required via a fax or phone call, the provider can initiate the request in the CMM portal. Or if the EHR indicates that a PA is required, which is usually done via the formulary and benefit file, Yeah, and in both cases, the provider is not actually usually proactively initiating a prior auth unless they are notified in some way, shape, or form that the patient will need one. So once an EPA request has been created, the user can then enter the demographic details. So this can usually includes information about the patient, health plan information, the coverage, provider details, and any prescription information. Depending on how the request is actually created, the PA can have that information auto-populated via the pharmacy system or the EHR, or the user has to enter it in manually. This information can be can dramatically vary by payer and by drug, and in fact, we're seeing more payers ask for more information as part of the PA initiation request as well. So once it's completed, the provider will actually submit that PA initiation request as the standard sort of dictates that that's that part of the transaction. When the PA initiation request is sent to the plan, a few things can happen. So we will generate an XML file that is sent over to the payer, and this information includes all of the demographic information as well as member information. Once it's received, the payer can check the member's eligibility, and if a patient isn't found or is not eligible, the payer will return a closed code and the PA can be either closed out or retried. If the patient's eligibility is confirmed, the payer will then return any drug-specific question sets with questions via the PA initiation response. Once the PA initiation response is received, the provider can complete the requested information by sharing relevant clinical information. And so these questions are dynamic in nature, meaning if a provider answers it in a certain way, only certain questions will appear as determined in the payer's clinical criteria management system. Once that is completed by the user, the XML is then generated and sent back to the payer via a PA request. So after the PA request is received, in their PA review workflow system, a few things can happen. Number one, if the payer has logic set up, the system can read the answers provided and send back a determination almost immediately. We do see this happen about 34% of the time in our system. So some PBMs and health plans do have that auto logic set up, but we definitely need to see more adoption and more automation there. If the payer cannot provide an auto determination, the review likely needs to have someone review that actual request. So a human being has to look through the details of the PA and issue a determination. So once that determination is actually made, the payer will send that determination back to the provider, and then sometimes they'll provide a reasoning for the determination, but this is not necessarily consistent PBM to PBM. If the PA is approved, the claim can be paid and the prescription can be dispensed. And if the PA is denied, a payer can indicate that they will, if a payer indicates that they will allow it, in certain cases, an e-appeal can be initiated. So this is when the payer sends us a flag that says this determination was denied and is eligible for an appeal. We present a few more questions, and then the user can answer those questions and submit an appeal electronically. this is, again, something that's not widely adopted, but we anticipate we'll see more traction with this given the Med-D mandate specifically calls out requiring appeals. So that's the PA workflow end-to-end. I'll say let's keep questions to the end so we can kind of get through the meat of our content. So if you could go to the next slide. Overall, the medication EPA workflow is really effective and it's working really well today. We have really built our business and the user experience around the retrospective workflow. And it works well because the pharmacy ultimately, from a retrospective perspective, is removing the burden of knowing when a PA is needed from the provider workflow, given today's current state of affairs and where how that eligibility and benefit information is available. So CoverMyMeds so because of that, the other thing that why our users and our network worked really effectively is because we provide one place, a one-stop shop for everyone in our network. So pharmacies, providers, and payers who provide that drug-specific dynamic question logic. It's responsive and it is providing that information in real time. And a common problem that you see with, you know, drugs that may be a mixed benefit or PAs that may be reviewed by a health plan directly and not a PBM, you have to go out to separate portals or many different places, and it's hard to sort of know where to go. So this is a place where we provide that one-stop shop access. We also provide fast determinations and real-time responses. So what was once a 3 to 5 day process can now be turned around in the same day, and in some cases as little as a few minutes. And so that's really the magic that electronic prior authorization can provide, especially when you're talking about a patient who's at the pharmacy waiting for that medication. In addition, we see that when we present users or present options to the users of alternative paths, if the PA is denied or if the patient can get the medication. And for example, formulary alternatives are the primary one. We definitely see a positive reaction from our users because they no longer have a dead end and they know how to take action and how to move forward. So while we know, while we've seen it be really effective and impactful to the network and our users in our network, there are still some significant challenges preventing the industry from realizing the true potential that automation and electronic prior authorization can promise. So truly prospective initiation is problematic, and this is due to a few different reasons. The EMR user experience can vary, but it's also a native integration, and sometimes those implementations can be a difficult user experience. And one of those things that we'll talk about a little bit more is the accuracy of the formulary and benefit information, as well as the data exchange. So you have duplication of data entry, which can be ultimately resolved by bidirectional data exchange. In addition, we also are working on expanding our offering into the medical drug PA space, because if you kind of zoom out and think about if a drug, especially mixed benefit drugs and more commonly specialty medications, can be covered under either the pharmacy or the medical benefit, it's incredibly difficult, as I mentioned before, for a provider to understand how the drug is going to ultimately be covered based on a number of different parameters that vary health plan to PBM to PBM, and how it ultimately needs to be dispensed. So can it go through a specialty pharmacy? Does it have to, will they allow and reimburse for buy and bill? And the buy and bill one is really tricky because providers are storing those medications, and so there's a really big risk for them if they administer a drug and it's ultimately not going to be covered. So the remainder of our presentation is going to be highlighting more of the details around how to resolve some of these challenges. So I'm going to hand it over to Miranda, the director of our provider business unit, to talk through that ideal workflow.
Great. Thank you, Liz. If you want to move on to the next slide, some of the things that we're going to talk about is really along the lines of an ideal state, and we are fortunate to have these elements built out and alive in the network today with EHRs and provider users. So some of the things that I'll point out here are that this is an in-workflow process, that what I will show you in just a couple of minutes is truly a prospective prior authorization workflow that is created during that e-prescribing workflow, you will have an opportunity to see that auto population of data, reducing keystrokes and ultimately administrative burden on the provider and their staff, as well as the opportunity for other care team members that support that provider to become involved and help in this process. And as Kim mentioned, if you'll go ahead and switch to the next slide for me. As Kim mentioned, I do have a pretty significant clinical background. And so for me, when I think about these things, it's really helpful for me to see what it actually would look like if I were working in an academic medical center or in my own primary care clinic. So here on the screen, what you'll see is a mock EHR. All of the information is fake. These are generated screenshots of an EHR. None of them are real. So for disclosure on that, this is a mock EHR landing page. So when I'm logged in as a provider, here are some things that I might see. I might see my schedule. I might see my list of patients, and I might see my recent activity. If you want to click and then click again to move to the next slide, you will see I have a full list of patients that I will be working with today on my primary care clinic day. And what you'll see is that we are going to spend some time talking about Charisse. Charisse is planned for a 1 o'clock visit, and she's a patient that I know very well. She's a 64-year-old female, and she happens to just be coming in for her annual well visit. If you could click again, that'll take us to the next screen in our EHR. And here you can review a couple of important things as a provider, and so you can see her current medication list, you can see her most recent office visit, you can see her vaccination status, and the reason for her visit today. So here's where I would take a step away from the computer and spend some time talking to Charisse about what's going on with her health and wellness since the last time that I saw her. I would eventually return to my screen after making a decision based on her assessment to add a new medication to her treatment plan. And to do that, we'll need to click. And then what we'll see is the opportunity to add a new medication. So here in my e-prescribing workflow, I'll go ahead and put the prescription details in. And once complete, I'll click confirm. And then I will have some additional information. And so we'll spend a little bit of time talking through this particular view of my EHR. So at this point for me, Charisse is still in the office. I will talk to her about this new medication. First, I'll describe what the medication is, how it should be taken. And in this case, it's once daily for 30 days. Here, I'll also have visibility into some of the key pieces that have been mentioned earlier in this presentation, as well as in the previous presentation. And we'll see that because we do have that real-time benefit transaction happening, that I can see some things that are very specific to my patient, Charisse. Based on her medication, her insurance, and that transaction running in the background, I can see that a prior authorization is in fact required for the medication that I would like to prescribe for Charisse. I can also see a few other things, including the patient pay amount at her preferred pharmacy. I can see recommended alternatives. And I can talk to her about whether those alternatives might be a good choice for her condition or not. And then I can see the available cash discount price. And so this is a price that I would want to talk to Charisse about and talk about her ability to afford her medication or the urgency in receiving the medication, knowing that there's a prior authorization required. And I can talk to Charisse about that cash price, and it might make sense for her to forego her prescription benefit and pay that out-of-pocket cash price. But ultimately, what I'm going to do at the bedside with Charisse is use all of these data elements to drive that conversation around cost and convenience and allow that shared decision-making to happen. You can go ahead and click to the next slide. Ultimately, what Charisse and I decide after having a discussion is that it is best to stick with the originally prescribed medication, which means that we will have to go down that prior authorization pathway. And so the pathway includes automatically starting that prior authorization, and then I will click to complete that PA, so we can go ahead and move to the next. You'll see the process outline that others have described for the steps that need to be taken to complete the prior authorization. And so I'll go ahead and fill those out under medical details, and we'll move to the next slide. After completing those elements, I will go ahead and send it to the plan, and we'll click to the next slide. On this particular PA, there are some additional questions that come back from the insurance plan. Now, myself, as a provider, I would have moved on to see another patient, and so this would populate in my EHR into a queue managed by my centralized prior authorization team, who's extremely proficient at completing prior authorizations. They would go ahead and fill out the remaining questions that were sent by the plan. And so you can go ahead and click. And after my centralized prior authorization team finishes that PA, they would go ahead and make that final submission to the plan. So we can click one more time. Yep, and so you'll see that for Charisse, we did submit this prior authorization electronically, and we did get that quick auto determination. And for Charisse in this particular scenario, she did get an approval. So now we can go ahead and send her to the pharmacy without any fear or anxiety around that medication being covered. So we'll talk more about the future state of what we expect to see and what our recommendations are to you all. And for that, I will hand it over to Anna Klatt, who leads our provider products team.
Thanks, Miranda. So there's two key areas that we wanted to touch upon that both we and the industry at large are investing in to help make this ideal EPA experience really a reality for providers. So first, we need better eligibility and benefits data to help drive a more accurate end-to-end EPA process. So today, the PA flags in the F&B file are not consistently completed by plans, and as a result of this, we receive provider feedback that indicates that providers have a severe lack of trust in the F&B file as it stands today. So to make progress in this area, we need plan-driven information that is updated in real time. Additionally, RTBT solutions take us a step forward by leveraging several different data sources to provide greater accuracy, mitigating false positives, and offering clinical decision support in real time and really farther up in the process. Second, the continued automation of clinical data exchange will further minimize provider burden by leveraging information that is already present within the EHR. We should continue to leverage the NCPDP script standard and enable coexistence with the new emerging FHIR standard. FHIR is great because it offers a standardized way to reach into an EHR system and get data that we need to process APA. This is a huge step forward in interoperability because we can pull in addition to receiving a push of data, which creates this bidirectional data exchange between the two systems. Additionally, OAuth2 is a standardized way to authenticate so that we can access EHR resources faster and more efficiently And because this is the standard, it is, of course, vetted and a secure option for our partners. So we can go ahead to the next slide, please. So we've taken significant steps towards this vision within the past 12 months. So just a couple of things to highlight here. We currently have a production implementation that uses these concepts, and we focus on meeting the provider where they are by using FHIR-like technology to enable a preferred user experience while also leveraging the information that is already present within the EHR. The team is also actively working on enabling the automation of clinical data to keep the clinician from having to key in repeated information that already exists in their system. So this is really getting to that clinical data pre-population. Next slide, please. So we've made great progress and we're really proud of our team, but there's certainly ample opportunities to improve. So as a summary, we put together the following recommendations to help drive the industry closer towards a fully automated PA workflow. As we've talked a lot about today, one of the greatest pain points for providers in the PA space is that false positive. We can alleviate this burden with more accurate PA prediction, and we have a couple of strategies to achieve this. In the short term, this can be improved by encouraging plans to complete the PA flag section of the FNB file. And this will create some efficiency, but it won't completely alleviate the issue of false positives, as the FNB file is not patient-specific, nor is it updated in real time. More robust drug-specific criteria and auto-determination logic would also increase the automation of the EPA process. Furthermore, plans should really strive to make patient-specific information available in real time to help inform the PA routing for retail and specialty medications. And lastly, we should be using and expanding upon industry standards such as NCPDP script and HL7 FHIR to expedite the patient, provider, clinical, and administrative data exchange. So Kim, Miranda, and Liz, anything that you guys want to add here before we open it up for questions?
Thanks, Anna. Nothing from my end. If there are any questions from the task force, we're happy to answer.
Okay, great. I do see a question. Alexis, this is Cheryl. Would you like to go forward?
Thanks, Cheryl. I'm going to ask the same question that I asked at the end of Luke's presentation, and that would be the availability of being able to see more than one payer and additionally coordination between the two payers. As you talk about the case presentation of Sharice being able to make a shared decision, if she had multiple insurers in the process, she wouldn't be able to completely make a shared decision and end up having difficulty perhaps at the pharmacy, as well as the end-to-end piece of it for everybody involved, so that there's no more work in the end. So I'm just wondering where that, if at all, can fit into your automation.
Great. Kim, who can answer that question for CoverMyMeds?
Yeah, hi, this is Kim. Liz, are you going to grab that?
Yep, I got it.
Got it.
I had to get myself off mute. So I want to make sure I'm understanding your question. So when you talk about the knowing, like the health plan to health plan, do you mean a health plan that is reviewing the prior authorization itself, or do you mean the PBM that's reviewing the prior authorization? Because there's a bit of a difference there in that the user typically doesn't know if it's a PBM and they've got like their member information, they enter that into the prior authorization, and that's if they have it. Sometimes they don't have it, and so we try to automate that part of the process as much as possible so that they're not having to pick and choose and essentially figure out which payer or which PBM provides that coverage. So that's kind of why I wanted to clarify to make sure I'm understanding.
So I guess it, I guess they mean it in terms of automating the PBN ahead of time to account for more than one payer source for the patient.
Oh,
So in the presentation where you have the Charisse and it, you pull up the EHR and it says, you know, you want to order a new medication and it shows the new medication and pops up, oh, well, this insurer requires a PA and it starts the process for you. But will, can you have more than one payer pop up there in that process and furthermore coordinate the benefit between the two where one might require a PA and one may not? More so that the first may not, but the second might.
Yeah, it is definitely still a problem. And, you know, Luke kind of mentioned this as well. It's something we're working on. We haven't quite figured it out yet. Kim, do you have anything you wanted to add in?
Yeah, happy to. Alexis, that's a great question. Coordination of benefits is a difficult challenge, and it's becoming even more challenging given the growth in specialty and really understanding where the patient is and their benefit and who all is covering them for that benefit. Having, you know, information surface more readily at the point of prescribing is definitely a need there. You know, versus staff getting on the phone, figuring out eligibility for a patient, and even then understanding whether or not to ask the question of do they have dual coverage, and forcing that information to the healthcare system. I do know that NCPDP works on coordination of benefit detail, but to the extent that that information is readily placed at the front of the prescribing or at the upstream with the prescriber is still a difficult challenge at this time.
Thank you for that answer. That's great. I think that for the team, this is something we're going to have to keep into our recommendations and other considerations because it does seem to be a challenge for the industry to deal with at this point. We're going to take a pause and do public comment right now. And then, Jim, you're going to be next up after public comment. Lauren, can you open the public line?
Sure. Operator, can we open the line?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments in the queue.
Okay, sure. We'll let you know if any other comments come through.
Thank you very much. All right, Jim, why don't we move to you? You had a question.
Yeah, thank you very much for the work and the presentation. Having been an ambulatory PCP, I know the burden of managing all this on staff and physicians and patients and pharmacists are great. I had a couple of quick questions maybe you can answer. One is, you know, if the process works well, there's different concepts like, you know, there's a percentage of these that just can be automatically adjudicated. And I think the prior speaker said 30% or so. Is that the same kind of percentage you're seeing? And then the second question is, for those that can't just be automatically adjudicated yet still need prior auth, is that something that at the front end of a process, the information that the providers need? For example, step therapy. If someone's trying to prescribe a medication that really requires step therapy, is that something provided as the PA is being filled out? Or is that being returning to the provider group after a denial or a request for more information? Can you go into a little bit more detail about how that works?
Hi, this is Kim. Yeah.
Okay,
hi, this is Kim and Liz and folks if you want to connect on the auto adjudicate. So to answer the first question around automation, we have seen, you know, some plans who are at an 85% rate of using electronic prior authorization via the standard process. It really, adoption of electronic processes is really, and determinations is really about the plan lift and the plans or PBM's willingness to programmatically make these things happen. And over the course of the last, 12 years or so, we've seen significant changes there, where plans are doing more to adopt the electronic process and provide more transparency and automation to that process. Step therapy is still something that is done today. It can be done prospectively through that clinical question set. So as a prescriber is going through the process, and let's say they put in X medication, through that clinical determination process, a plan can ask the question of, have they tried a different medication, maybe a lower cost one? The variables are different from plan to plan based on their formulary coverage. But that can be facilitated prospectively at the point of prescribing. But what we do sometimes see, as was mentioned in the presentation, is we also have a retrospective process. So if the prescriber, for whatever reasons, determined not to do the PA, wasn't aware that a PA was needed because there were false positives, false negatives at the point of prescribing due to inaccurate data in the system, such as formulary benefit not being complete, PA flag not being indicated, and it rejects at the pharmacy for step therapy, we can still facilitate via the standard and electronic means to get that detail back to the prescriber versus having to get on the phone or fax. And we can do that instantaneously to get it back to the prescriber for the prescriber to make an alternative decision to move forward or provide additional clinical documentation to support the need for the originally prescribed medication. So that is capable today through the NCPDP script and, FHIR-based technologies that are in the system today. And hopefully that answers your question, Jim.
Yeah, can I tack on real quick there? Just to clarify, when we say auto adjudication, I don't know that I'm familiar with that term, but how we tend to refer to it is an auto determination. And so what that really means is that the PBM or the payer that's reviewing the criteria and the information that has been submitted, they can either auto approve or auto close. We actually don't see a lot of them auto deny because typically they like to review if something throws up a flag and it can't be auto-approved, and so that will go into a queue where they will approve. So end-to-end, we see about 34% of our total EPA submissions are actually have some sort of auto-determination today. That number needs and has plenty of room to grow, especially as you think about And that's part of the reason of why we made the recommendation that the more the PBMs and the plans adopt drug-specific criteria and criteria management systems to be able to manage that criteria, the more accurate the questions are. And right. the better ability for them to actually automate that determination.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, we have one more question we're going to take, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. Gus?
Yeah, very interesting software. Is any of the software already integrated into existing EHRs, or does it require, basically opening up another program on the computer?
Yeah, so I'll speak to that real quickly. This is Miranda. So it's integrated into many of the largest EHRs that you're familiar with in the industry. We do, for those smaller practices and physician groups that don't use kind of one of the larger Epic, Cerner, Allscripts type of names, we do have all sizes of integrations, but then the functionality also exists via our web portal, which anybody can access from their computer.
Thank you.
Fabulous. All right. So I think we had a great meeting today. Fabulous demonstrations by both SureScripts and CoverMyMeds. If folks have any additional questions that we didn't have time for today, I'm just going to ask you if you could write them separately, and we will get them off to the speakers to see if they can get answered. But I think we drove some great points with both of these presentations today that we'll be able to carry through for our considerations and recommendations. So the homework again for this team for this week, please review the workbook. Please make questions or comments on the materials in all of the tabs. Again, if you can't get into the workbook, let the folks from Excel know, and they will make that happen for you. And again, if you have any questions, please let us know and we'll forward them on to the speakers. We'd like to thank the speakers for coming today. We really, really appreciate it. The information you shared was very important, and it's going to be important for us to keep it in mind as we go forward. Alex, did you want to add anything?
I think you did a great job. Thank you.
All right. So I think that's a wrap. Thanks, everybody, for your time today, and we hope you have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.